Hi, everyone. Welcome into another edition of Scrambled Eggs, your unofficial Marquette basketball podcast here on Crack Sidewalks. Joe McCann and Phil Bush here with you a little bit later than normal this time around. Life got in the way, as it often does, Phil. But I'm ready to talk some Marquette hoops.
Hey, listen, I'm talking to you from a hotel room in Cleveland. Who could be more excited about Marquette hoops than me?
I guess no one. I mean, well, there's not much else to do in Cleveland, so I guess Correct. You had to do something while you're up there.
Yeah, the today's show, by the gonna... lake means I need to have some Marquette talk in my life.
And plus, there's no, like, LeBron there to watch
anymore.
I mean, there's just nothing.
Baker Mayfield.
Well, we got Baker, yeah, so maybe it's getting better in that regard. Today's show, we're going to react to the games that have gone on since we last potted, especially the ones in Brooklyn, maybe touch on Charleston Southern, talk about how Marquette's identity may be changing a little bit, and then, of course, do we have a chance against Kansas State, 12th-ranked team in the country, coming to the Fiserv Forum on Saturday. Phil, I just want to start with what happened in Brooklyn last week during Thanksgiving. As expected, a loss to Kansas, but I think the way Marquette lost in that game really had people wringing their hands because, you know, Marquette had a big lead in the first half, like 11 points, and then a 24-0 run later, and we're like, my gosh, what happened?
Yeah. Yeah, that was a – I mean, that was a tale of two halves, certainly. I think the biggest thing that everyone was reacting to, and I think it's fair. I don't know how much I personally read into it. But I think the biggest reaction was kind of the macro view of Marquette basketball under Wojo, in that they show instances of great possibility, but always manage to not string it together into, you know, long-term success, right? Like the Villanova win as the number one team was followed up by three losses, including against Providence at home and Georgetown on the road against a bad Georgetown team, right? So I think the game itself was frustrating, but I think the big takeaway was, how does that play in the larger macro view of the Wojo era? Is Wojo able to string success together is the question.
Yeah, I was joking with somebody on Twitter. I think I've, you know how John Rothstein has his little cliches for like every coach in college basketball? I think I've came up with the Rothstein for Wojo. It's
oh, good.
Wojo, great at times.
it's kind of accurate right now.
Yeah, like, you know, there's some, you know, something I determined about Wojo over the last week is, no matter which, I don't know if I want to get into the Wojo coaching job or anything again in this pod, but no matter which side of the Wojo debate you're on about whether he's a good coach or a bad coach or if he needs to stay or if he's getting it done, no matter which side you're on, he is not quite where you need him to be. And what I mean by that is, if you are a person who loves Wojo and really wants him to succeed and really think he's building the program, well, you see things that you like, he brings in good players, and he gets a win, good win here or there, but then just when you think everybody's about to be on your side, there's one of those games like, yikes.
Yeah.
Like, he just falls short, like, the teams just fall short of really turning the corner, and then there's just stretches of mediocrity that really make you groan. And then if you're on the other side of the coin, if you're a person who really doesn't like Wojo and wants him gone and wants a change, you definitely see those stretches where you're like, well, here we go again, and we're just never going anywhere. But he never is bad enough that everyone is on the fire Wojo bandwagon. Like, he always will get a win that kind of saves, I don't know if saves his job is the right word, but kind of like makes everyone like, hey, that's something. Like,
right.
I can see where it's going now. And I think the win against Louisville was the latest example of that. Like, just when you think everyone was this, like, on the brink and on the edge, like, he goes out and gets a nice win against Louisville, who goes out and beats Michigan State in the next game, so it looks even better. But no matter which side of the Wojo thing you're on, he's always just short. I don't think I'm not sure he's ever going to be bad enough to get fired or ever be good enough that everyone's like, yes, we've made it and we're a great program.
I think that's hyper accurate. I just struggle with, you know, how much of the performance against Kansas, right, like both the good and the bad, how much do you put on Wojo and how much do you put on the players, which certainly Wojo coaches and has recruited and all that stuff. But how much of that 24-0 run do you put on Wojo versus, hey, players got to hit shots, right? Like,
yeah,
how much of
yeah,
that is bad luck?
And, And that's the thing. Like, in the grand scheme of things, if, you know, you're saying, you know, you lost to Kansas by 8, well, I don't know if I'd blame necessarily anybody for that other than Bill Self, because he's just had a better team.
Right.
And, like, but yeah, like, how do you reconcile a 24-0 run against anybody? Like, I mean, even if playing in one of the top teams in the country, like Kansas or Duke or Gonzaga, you got to get a bucket at some point. To go, what was it? I think 8 minutes without a bucket.
9 minutes. They didn't score in the second half until the 10:40 mark.
Gosh, I hate always being in the middle, but I mean, it's got to be on everybody. Like,
right.
I don't think you could say the players were truly doing their best and Wojo was screwing it up, but I also don't think Wojo had a great game plan and the players were just screwing it up. I think everybody had a hand in that. And, like, I think ultimately, yeah, everything boils down to the coach at some point, because he's got the players out there and he's got to make the adjustments and it's on him to lead. So if I have to pick one, I would pick Wojo, but I think everybody in that locker room had a hand in that meltdown against Kansas.
Yeah, well, and the thing that I struggle with, and it's something we'll talk about about the season at large, or the identity of this team, but the thing I struggled with is that Kansas game, as frustrating as it was, the defense was, I'll say, good enough to win. Like, the defense wasn't a disaster against Kansas. I mean, it certainly wasn't the case in the second half, where the second half was way worse than the first half. I mean, Kansas got about as many points in each half, right? So the defense was, at worst, adequate.
The defense has only really been bad against Indiana.
Right.
I think it's been adequate to good in every other game.
Right, and so that's where I struggle in the Kansas. Like, the Kansas game is representative, but it is part of the larger whole. Why is the offense not great all of a sudden? I mean, 24-0 run, like, I mean, think about it. Like, even if Marquette gave up a 24-12 run, I mean, if that's the case, Marquette wins by 3, right? Like, so, like, if the defense is competent, they're in that game. Like, or the offense is competent, they're in that game. Why was the offense so bad, especially in the second half?
Yeah, and I think that's kind of one of the topics I wanted to dive into in this podcast is Marquette a defensive team now? Like, I know we all feel that, like, this should be an elite offensive team. KenPom, at the time we're recording this, still has Marquette as the 25th ranked offense in the country, but I think a lot of that data is buoyed by stats from last year. But if you look at the stats just from this year, as it was pointed out to us last week, you know, just look at the four factors, which are strictly this year. Marquette is, on offense, 130th in effective field goal percentage, which is the most important factor, 249th in turnover percentage, 110th in offensive rebounds, and 283rd in free throw rate. And you go even deeper, they're 80th in three-point percentage, 208th in two-point percentage. They're 18th in the country in free throw percentage, so that's something. And then 197th in getting their shots blocked and 287th in steals, you know, getting the ball stolen. So basically, outside of free throw percentage, Marquette is no higher than 80th in any offensive stat on KenPom. So I don't know how you do all that math. I mean, obviously, I know how, because you're using stats from last year. But you can't look at all those stats and say that somehow comes out to a top 20 offense or a top 50 offense even. And I know we're all telling ourselves that this is a great offensive team and it's going to even out and it's going to come around, but you know, Christmas is coming, and unless Santa is bringing some offense, I think we need to change. We might need to shift our expectations on this team and say, this may not be an elite offensive club. And back to your question, Phil, why isn't it? I mean, I think, is it just as simple as saying Rousey's gone? You know, he was obviously an elite offensive talent, just the way he could fill it up, and just as a compliment to Marcus Howard. And, you know, we knew what the payoff, you know, the other side of that was, is what he gave up defensively. But I think we knew coming into this year, and I think everyone did, the coaching staff, the fans, everybody, that Marquette was going to trade some offense for defense this year. And we thought most of that was going to be Chartouni for Rousey. But I also, as it has turned out, you know, Helt has taken a smaller role, and you're going with Theo John in the middle. Now, Theo John has been scoring all right. I don't know if he's even scoring even at a rate that Matt Helt did last year, because Matt Helt was, he didn't score a ton, but I think the offense was pretty good when he was out there last year. Again, could probably attribute that more to Rousey and Howard and what they did with health out there. But my point remains, you have traded offense for defense this year, but I think we all told ourselves that still with Howard and Sam Houser, and then you add Joey Houser on top of that, that the offense would still be somehow close to what it was last year, and it just isn't. So is it time to embrace Marquette as a slower-paced, defensive-minded team?
You know, I really wonder how much of this is attributable to turnovers, right? I mean, the turnover rate is significantly higher than this year.
The turnover rate is alarming, and right. I'm not sure how you fix it, yeah.
So I mean, there's been some arguments on Twitter that, you know, slow the ball down, fewer possessions, get more out of it. And I certainly think you've heard me on this podcast advocate for the defense is actually competent, is actually at its best when it's set against a team that's taking the ball, bringing the ball up from under the hoop, right? Like, so this defense, when it's set up against a team that's having to take the ball out because Marquette made a basket, that's when the defense is going to be best. So whatever you can do to maximize the offense, not necessarily for the sake of scoring as many points as possible, but you want the offense to score points because that serves the defense. But the turnovers are the exact opposite of that, right? Like, your turnovers are generating fast break. And I don't have any statistical evidence, but just based on the eye test, Marquette is atrocious at the fast break defense. So I think it comes down to whether it's slowing it down or what it is. I don't know what the answer is, but finding ways to cut those turnovers down is absolutely the most critical thing to getting this offense. And it's not exactly rocket science analysis, but like, I don't think it can be overstated how important it is to cut down those turnovers, because it impacts the defense and it takes shots away from the offense that could generate points.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it sounds obvious, but that's the thing that jumps out at you when your turnover rate is one of the worst in the country. I mean, it's .249 in the country,
yep,
right now. I mean, that, you know, you're in the bottom third of the nation with that, and you look at your 3-point percentage is okay. I think it's going to get better. And like, we already went through all the other offensive stats, and like, none of them are great. But yeah, when you're one stat like that is just so bad, like in the bottom third of the country, it does affect everything else. And you know, you touched on the defense, you know, being better in the half court. You know, at the time we're recording this on Wednesday night, Marquette's effective field goal percentage on defense is top 20 in the country. It's number 16.
Who saw that coming?
Yeah, like it's really good, and I think, yeah, the transition thing is a good point, because when the defense gets set, I think you've got, more often than not, you've got John and sometimes Morrow in the paint as a rim protector, and I think that's been a huge difference this year.
Yep.
I mean, Marquette's in the top 100 this year in block percentage, and I think certainly a lot of that can be attributed to those guys in the middle. And as John comes into his own, and Morrow's getting some pretty good playing time as well there. But yeah, you know, you could say, well, stop turning it over. Well, that's, you know, that's easy to say. It's like telling a pitcher to throw strikes. Well,
right.
Duh. But you know, like, how do you do it? And I think we're seeing more playing time from Chartouni to try to get Marcus off the ball a little more. So maybe that's part of it.
Well, but I mean, it's tough, but if you look at their turnover rates, I mean, Marcus has got a turnover rate of 18, and Chartouni's got a 35.
Yeah, 35. That's second worst on the team behind Morrow.
Right.
So it's not like Chartouni really takes care of the ball either. One thing I am taking away so far is that if Greg Elliott gets healthy enough to play, he's going to play. I think a red shirt is off the table, because I think you got to see if he brings anything else to the guard spot that would, one, allow, you know, Chartouni and Marcus to play more together.
Yeah.
Because that's one thing he, like Wojo has said, why aren't they playing together as much? He said, well, we've only really got 2 point guards right now. Or two guards, period.
Yeah.
You know, most everyone else is a forward. So I don't think, we talked about that in the preseason, would a red shirt be on the table for Elliott? I think it's completely off the table. If he's healthy enough to play, he's going to play. The only way he gets redshirted is if his hand is just too bad for him to take the court, and hopefully that's not the case. I think all indications are they're planning on having him back. So But again, does that fix the turnover problem? I'm not sure.
We didn't see anything out of Greg Elliott last year that says he's going to be a solution in a non-turnover way.
Right, yeah, and he was playing with a bad hand last year, and he's probably going to be playing with a bad hand again this year. So, I don't think that fixes your turnover problem. And, again, I'm not exactly a coach here, but I guess maybe if you slow it down a little bit, you turn it over less, and maybe you're not as risky with the ball, and you're not trying to rush shots or not trying to run, and if you have time to actually set up the offense and you're a little more crisp with your passes and a little more selective in how the offense runs, maybe that cuts it down. I have no idea. But hopefully the coaching staff can figure that out, because that once that turnover rate gets to a more acceptable level, I would like to see where the offense is if the shot percentages go up, because guys are getting better looks and the offense isn't as rushed. And again, maybe the defensive numbers will continue to get better than they already are, because the defense, as you alluded to, seems to be at its best in the half court.
Right. Yeah. Well, and I mean, the thing about the offense, again, there's no real way to statistically account for this, but I mean, I think some of the problems, the turnovers are the clearest problem. But other than that, like, shooting percentage is down, right? Sure, Marcus Howard's only shooting, almost 37% from three, which is down for him considerably.
Right.
And the team as a whole's three-point shooting is down on the season generally. But, like, I think half the time they're missing good open shots, right? Like, I don't think... There's definitely times where Marcus has a little bit of Rousey hero ball in him. And I think hopefully some of that goes away as he gets more faith or trust in the rest of the team, in terms of the ball doesn't have to come to him for a must offensive possession. But I think they'll start hitting more and more of the open shots that they're taking, right? They're just missing them. I'd say half of Marcus's shots are, or I should say half of his missed shots are good within the flow of the offense shots.
Yeah. Like, I think the thing with Howard is, I think he's had such a nice reputation with his shot selection the previous 2 years, to even have him like take two like heat checks like is out of character for him. Like,
right.
That seems like too many for him. And, like, yeah, I think there have been some times maybe he's been pressing a little because, again, you said 37%, which is fine for most guys, but it's not fine for Marcus Howard.
Like, right.
Marcus Howard is a guy who has shot much better than that in his career. Let's see, his first season he shot 54%, and last year he shot 40%.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
So you're hoping that comes back around and he gets into the 40s. I don't know if we'll ever see him shoot 54% from three, but that's where he wants to be. Like when he's, making one out of every three three-pointers, that's bad for him. You know, he wants to be making two out of every three. So maybe he does force it a little maybe he's in a slump, but the one thing I don't want to happen is for him to stop shooting.
Right.
Like even like when you see he, puts up a number like 3 for 14 from three. Well, that's certainly a bad day for him, but I still want him shooting 10 plus threes every game, because I think that's going to come around. He's going to have his games where if he shoots 10 threes, he's going to make six or seven. He's going to have those types of nights, and you're just waiting for that to come back around, and hopefully it happens on Saturday against Kansas State.
Well, I mean, and he has to keep shooting because the threat of Howard opens up the rest of the offense, right? Like if Howard's not a threat in the game for whatever reason, the defenses can do considerably different things against this team, right? Because it's not a team that necessarily creates its own shot or gets into the lane with great skill. So they have to have good shooting nights from outside to generate the inside offense. Though I will say, Ed Morrow is still a work in progress, which I'm a little surprised by. But Theo John has been, at times, a man among boys on the inside, especially offensively. And it's kind of refreshing, right? I mean, that we haven't really had a true inside presence like that.
Yeah, we have. We've been missing the muscle inside. Like, you know, Matt Helt, you know, again, his offensive rating was terrific last year. Again, we all know it was a small sample size, so we kind of joked about it on the pod, but still, it was a good number, and he played a good role, but he was more of a finesse big man, where, like, having some muscle on the inside now is significant, and it's shown more on the defensive end, as we talked about a few minutes ago. But, yeah, I do like having a little more physical presence in the paint this year, and yeah, and obviously Wojo does as well, and the minutes reflect that. You know, you feel for Matt Helt as his minutes have decreased, but I don't think it's taken away from the team at all because, you know, Matt's probably happy to fill whatever role the team asks of him.
Well, wild speculation on my part. I don't know that Matt's 100% healthy anyway from the truck toe incident from the off season. So
yeah, I forgot about that thing, but yeah. I mean, he's playing, so he's healthy enough.
Yeah, he's healthy enough. But, I mean, it's clear that Theo John and, to a certain extent, Ed Morrow are just, whether you call it more talented or just more bringing the stuff that Wojo needs in both the offense and the defense, that's just the reality of the situation. That's where we are right now. And I don't, you know, it seems like Matt is the ultimate team player, so... as long as he's okay with it, then, you know, and we continue to get wins, then that's got to be what it's got to be. But I wanted to ask you, what was your takeaway from the Louisville game, which was, I mean, that was inches from disaster at times, right? In terms of, having no significant wins going into a tough stretch of basketball coming up.
Yeah. Well, we mentioned that in the last podcast that I think calling it a season saver may be a bit dramatic, but it's a game you needed because you've got to beat somebody in the non-conference, and hopefully more than just one or two teams if you want to talk about being a tournament team. And granted, the losses that they had going into that were expected, but the fact that you lost them put your back against the wall against the other notable teams on your schedule. And yeah, it was a struggle, obviously, the entire game. Marquette was trailing pretty much all night, and then pulled it out at the end. Yeah, it wasn't pretty, but I'll take any win against Chris Mack anytime I can get it. And granted, he's going to have better teams at Louisville than this one, but the fact that they went out and beat Michigan State in their next game, that's great for us. And Joey Hauser continues to impress, man. And, you know, he was big in that game, and he's been big in most games this year. And yeah, man, I think the team showed a lot of grit in that game. You know, like, I know the entire fan base was groaning all the way up until the final buzzer, thinking, well, are we ever going to go anywhere? But the fact is they won, and I think they're still on pace, according to a lot of preseason predictions, to have a nice record this season. So they got what they needed. Was it pretty? No. Was the offense clicking like we hoped? No. And, yeah, I know, obviously there was the controversial call on a three-pointer by Louisville that was counted as a two, and sorry about it, but I'm not going to cry any tears for Louisville. They cry enough tears for themselves. So I don't care. Marquette got the win, and we'll take it. So I was happy with the win. Yeah, it was ugly. It was tough to watch at times, and they trailed the entire game. But the fact is, the final score was in Marquette's favor.
Yeah, well, and I think if you take the kind of the Marquette Schadenfreude out of it, like, that you're right. That was a gritty win. Like, if you take away the, you know, what happened against Kansas the night before, and, you know, kind of take the overall, the macro view out of it, that was a strong victory. I mean, yes, Louisville is down, quote unquote, this season, but they're not a chump, right? And
yeah, they're going to be a bubble team. And right. I think they're going to be right in the mix. So who knows? I mean, hopefully Marquette's not a bubble team, but if they are, they might have a win against a team they're fighting for a spot with. So take it.
Right. You know, and I would honestly say, I think that's the type of game that so if I'm putting on my optimistic hat, that's a type of game that Marquette folds in previous years, right? They just don't have the ability to gut it out, and kind of close the deal. So again, I think that it's, could it have been prettier? Could the offense have been better? Sure. But, I mean, it is what it is at this point, and we just got to hope that the offense continues to improve while the defense, at a minimum, you know, stays at where it is.
That's another game where the defense won the game, especially Morrow. You know, as much as the work in progress he's been on the offensive side, that block he had at the end and getting the ball back.
That was great. The presence of mind to get the block, get the rebound, not fall out of bounds, get it to Howard in a good position. Now it was followed up by, you know, Howard still doesn't know how to not get trapped in a trap, I guess I'll say. You know, so that caused some hairy moments and forced us to use some timeouts we might otherwise not have wanted to. But, I mean, all in all, I think, like I said, if you step away from like, oh, here we go again, I think there are definitely nuggets of improvement with this team. Maybe not fast enough or strong enough for some, but there are signs of life to this team. Really starting to kind of put the pieces together.
Yeah, I don't know what to take away from the win over Charleston Southern. I mean, that's a team you're supposed to beat badly. Marquette did beat them badly, a game that was really never in doubt. Another nice game for Chartouni. Brennan Bailey maybe got out of a funk a little bit, hit a few more shots, got some more playing time. I don't know how much we're going to see from him against tougher opponents, but it's good to see him get some run. Chartouni shooting 53% from three on 13 shots, but hey, I'll take it.
He should probably shoot more.
Yeah. So is momentum building, and what can happen against Kansas State this weekend, Phil? Because, you know, because Marquette enters a crucial stretch now where two of the next three games are against ranked opponents at the Fiserv Forum.
Where we're undefeated.
I'm sorry. What'd you say there?
I said where we are undefeated.
Yeah. Haven't lost a game yet. Let's hopefully keep that going all season long. But let's talk about this, you know, Kansas State game. We'll get to the Wisconsin game over the weekend in our next podcast. But, you know, Kansas State is a very good team. I mean, let's be honest with us. You know, this is going to be a challenging game for Marquette. They are 18th in KenPom right now. They're undefeated. Marquette's probably the best team. Yeah, definitely the best team Kansas State has played to this point. You look at their schedule right now. They had the cupcakes at the beginning. They beat Penn. And then they beat Missouri, who's the only top 100 team according to KenPom, and Missouri's 99. And then they beat Lehigh. So it's not like they've been rolling over great teams, but still, this is a team that went deep in the tournament last year. They got to the Elite Eight. They bring back pretty much everybody from that team. Among the notable, of course, Barry Brown's one of their best players. Dean Wade, who every time I hear his name, I think I hear D Wade.
Right.
So Marquette fans are going to have to get used to that. You know, he's going to be tough in the middle. And this is a team that plays really good defense. As good as Marquette's defensive numbers are on KenPom, Kansas State's better in all of them. I mean, they are top 20 in the top three four factors on defense, and they're 57 in three throw rate, which is the least important. But I guess they're not better than Marquette in effective field goal percentage. Marquette's slightly better right now. They're 16th. Kansas State is 18th. So there's that,
right?
But very close.
And against, it should be pointed out, you mentioned it a little bit, but those numbers for Kansas State are against, we'll say, lesser sets of competition.
They have not played a Final Four contender or a lottery pick yet. That's for sure.
Right. So I think it's a strong chance for Marquette to get a win. I certainly wouldn't go so far to say like Kansas State is somehow overrated. They're definitely a strong team. I think it's going to be interesting because it's pseudo strength on strength in a weird way. Like it's Kansas State's defensive strength versus Marquette's defensive strength. Because
I think this game's going to be in the 60s. KenPom has Marquette as a slight favorite, a 1-point favorite, and a 69-68 final is the predicted. But yeah, so this may be a rock fight.
Yeah. Well, I'm interested to see what the crowd's like for this game, right? Like it's not a late afternoon, but a mid-afternoon weekend clash. Marquette hasn't been, lighting up the highlight reels in terms of, oh, look at all these people they beat. So I'm curious to see what the crowd's like. You would think that would be a very energetic and large crowd, but I could also see it being, kind of an average crowd, just because people aren't going to necessarily think that highly of K-State, Kansas State. The casual fan may not be there, but it'll be interesting to see what the atmosphere is, because this is the first real opportunity for kind of a high-energy atmosphere in the Fife-Sur Forum.
Yeah, I mean, look, if you're a Marquette basketball fan in the greater Milwaukee area and you're planning on catching some games this year and this game doesn't interest you, I mean, what the hell does? Obviously Wisconsin does, and probably Villanova, but beyond that, I mean, dude, get your ass to the Forum. I mean, this is a great game. How many times is a top, a top 20, top 15 team going to come to your court on the weekend, and you get a chance to see a very good team play, a team that was in the Elite Eight a year ago? This is a great opportunity. I would hope it's going to be a full house. Again, it may not. I get what you're saying, that it may not have the buzz of like a rivalry game or a Big East game, but yeah, man, I mean, this is a very good team, and Marquette's going to need all the fan support it possibly can to beat this team. So hopefully it's loud. For those of you hanging around in the Milwaukee area, be sure to check out the volleyball team, by the way. They're hosting an NCAA tournament game, so good for them. Shout out to the Marquette volleyball team, 14th seed in the nation. So if you want to get a double dose of Marquette action, be sure to check out the volleyball team. But
just make sure you don't drive your cars anywhere near the Owl.
Yes, for crying out loud, people, be careful driving around the Al McGuire Center. How does this keep happening?
Like, do we need to paint the building in orange? Like, what is that?
Do we need to put, like, a steel gate around the Al McGuire Center?
did you see the video of the guy who drove into there from over the weekend on Saturday? I don't know whether to call it impressive driving, but the fact that, like, drove in, broke through the window, but was driving slow enough that when he hit the concrete concession wall, the car wasn't inoperable, backed up, and then managed to drive down the hallway and onto the court. Like, I just the logic.
Yeah,
of
like
all.
I saw former Marquette player Joe Chapman tweet about that. He's like, "Well, I guess I'll just drive in and get some shots up." I don't know how that happens, but again, we're getting off topic. But again, check out the volleyball team if you can this weekend. Support that team; that's great. But yeah. Back to your point, I hope it is a big crowd. I would be extremely disappointed if it's not a big crowd. Because, like I said, it's a brand new building. They're trying to get people in there. There's a lot of buzz over the building to begin with. There are, honestly, if you were to rank the top five opponents coming to the Fiserv Forum this year, this is probably a solid third behind Wisconsin and Villanova. And you could probably, even as far as buzz goes, even Kansas State's probably a better team than Villanova, but there's a certain buzz about,
right,
team that's won two national
championships.
There's
a certain cachet, if you will.
Yeah, and plus it's a Big East game.
Right.
So, if you can't get up for the, if you're a Marquette basketball fan and you're not excited for this game, I don't know what you're going to get excited for. This is a great opportunity for Marquette, and if you win this game, now all of a sudden there was a buzz about this team. Say, all right, they can be a tournament team, because this is an experienced Elite Eight team, bringing back almost every single player from a team that, granted, they got to the Elite Eight. Yes, because UMBC upset Virginia, so maybe their path was a little easier. They still beat Kentucky to get there. So, I mean, they beat some good teams, and I think they're picked second in the Big 12, which is probably the strongest conference top to bottom in the country right now. So, great opportunity for Marquette. And what concerns me the most about them is their defense. And, the way they defend, I'm afraid Marquette goes into another 5, 6, 7, 10 minute stretch without making a basket, because then that's how you lose games to a team like Kansas State.
Right. Yeah, it's going to be a question of, like, can the offense sustain itself long enough to let the defense do its job? Because Kansas State is not a great offensive team, right? I mean, they're good at rebounding, they're great at defense, and they're so-so to not good at offense, right? So
they're definitely not a good three-point shooting team. So if Marquette can build a lead, Kansas State may not have the three-point shooting to catch up in a hurry. They're going to grind it out and go to the bucket. I mean, their three-point shooting right now is ranked 306 in the country. compared to Marquette at 81. 2-point percentage, a little better, but not like elite or anything. It's 123. It was ranked 123 compared to Marquette's 208. So, yeah, there's nothing about this team offensively that is going to wow you. I think they definitely get points thanks to their defense. I mean, they'll get some points in transition. And then, you know, if they can get a lead, then they'll just try to really slow you down, grind it out on defense. You know, they're going to get the ball inside to Dean Wade as much as they possibly can. And then, you know, they got a lot. Like all the guys who returned from last year, Barry Brown gets a lot of minutes. Xavier Sneed is a really good player. But a lot of it is the offense is going to go through Wade. The offense going through Wade in Milwaukee. That brings back memories. But yeah, that's what Kansas State is going to try to do. And I think Kansas State would prefer a low scoring game based on what we've seen from Marquette. Marquette probably would be up for a low scoring game as well. But you just keep waiting for that game when Marcus Howard and one of the Housers are both hot, you know, and
right.
The threes are really falling. And then I think you can upset a team like Kansas State.
You know, and I don't know whether we're at the prediction portion of the pod, but
let's get to it.
I have a good feeling about this game from a Marquette perspective, right? Like I'm not disrespecting Kansas State, but you know, if you look at the four factors, both on offense and defense, I mean, they're certainly great on defense, but they're pretty bad on offense, right? And so I think, especially in an early season matchup and a home game, I think there's enough juice there for Marquette's offense to do enough to win. I'm not worried about getting into a shootout with Kansas State.
Yeah, exactly. You're worried about just not hitting, like their defense just putting the clamps down and you just not getting enough good looks from three to put enough points on the board, and you go into a long stretch without scoring a basket, and all of a sudden you found yourself down 10 points and you just can't claw your way back. Yeah, that's the fear against Kansas State. But you know, keep in mind, this is the first big college game at the Fiserv Forum. This is the, all the other games at the Forum so far have been bye games. UMBC, Bethune-Cookman, Presbyterian, Charleston Southern. This is the first actual challenge, and that's why I would be extremely disappointed if it's not a packed house. I hope it's loud, and I hope the fans are up for it. I know the students are going to be up for it. I'm sure they're going to be ready. And yeah, I think for that reason and the fact that Kansas State, while good, has not faced a team as good as Marquette this year, yeah, I'm going to try to be optimistic and say Marquette does scratch out a win. I think it'll be close. I'm kind of right in line with the KenPom prediction. I'm going to go 69-67. So I mean, which is basically almost exactly what KenPom has. So yeah, I think it'll come down to the wire, because I think when you play a slow it down game, those games tend to be close, especially against a team as talented as Kansas State. Hopefully you can get a few whistles at home and that helps. And I think we're just waiting for an offensive explosion from somebody. I think too much of that is put on Howard, but for good reason. He's a talented player. But don't forget, either Hauser brother can blow up for 20, 25 points at any time. So that could happen as well. And I think Saturday would be a great day for it to happen.
Yeah. The only outside concern I have, and this is a weird concern, but Marcus Howard apparently had the flu during the Charleston Southern game, which impacted him. So you have to... The only outside concern I would have is what is there a flu epidemic flowing through the team which could impact the performance of the game. But I think the score ends up being, I think it's a lower score, but I think it ends up being something like 65-59 Marquette or something like that.
Yeah, get Marcus in quarantine, get him a lot of fluids. Everybody get your flu shots. Do what you got to do, man. Good news is Marquette has depth this year.
Right.
So if there are like three or four guys feeling it, feeling a bug, they got enough guys that hopefully can play. Now, granted, if it's some of Marquette's best players that are sick, I don't know if the guys on the bench are going to make up for that. Like Marquette has good guys who are good as role players off the bench. I don't know how many guys could carry the team if you're, say, missing a guy like Marcus or Sam. But, yeah, at least there is some depth, especially if guys like – like if you're sick, you're going to get tired quicker. So if Marcus needs a blow, or if Sam can, some other guys can't run, there's guys who can spell them a little more. You got enough depth there. So I hope that's a factor, and I hope I'm right. And Marquette can just stay on this pace, because I think the perception of this team changes quite a bit with a win over Kansas State, right?
Yeah.
I think if you lose this game, you know, there's still a little angst that we're probably still kind of bubbly, and we're kind of probably going to be there all season. But if you win this game, suddenly you start to get optimistic. Maybe too optimistic, because then you're hoping you can beat Wisconsin at home, and if you beat Buffalo at home, then you could get out of the non-con with just two losses. But you lose this game, you're like, well, crap, can we beat Wisconsin? I don't know. And then you're worried about how many good wins you're even going to have in the non-conference, and then you're worried about if your resume is going to be even good enough for the tournament. So I don't know if I'd call it a swing game, but as far as perception of this team, a lot is riding on this game this weekend.
Yep, agree. It's cliche, but it's the most important game on the schedule right now.
It is, because it's the next one.
Correct.
Did I ever tell you when I was working in Louisiana, well, somebody asked Nick Saban that question?
No.
You know, just a little aside, you know, because my first job out of college, I was working in Louisiana at a TV station down there, and I covered LSU football. And you guys have probably seen enough Nick Saban press conferences at this point in your lives that, you know, he's a no-nonsense guy. He may speak and coach speak, but he actually means it. You know, he's never going to overhype any game. And he was like that all the time. You know, and, you know, he's never going to overhype any game, no matter what the opponent was, who the rivalry was. And one year he was going into the SEC championship game. And it was the press conference before that, and somebody, in typical reporter fashion, would ask, Nick, is this the biggest game of your career? And he just stares at the guy for like 5 seconds. It felt like an hour, but like he just stared at him for a minute. And he just does this big sigh and goes, it is, because it's the next game we play. And everybody just erupted into laughter. And like, he didn't think it was funny, but all of us did. It was just so funny. But, you know, before we get out of here, Phil, I did learn something on Twitter over the weekend.
Okay.
That I want to hit you with this and see if this is just a thing that somehow everybody knew that I just missed. I don't know how the thing is, if you did know this and I didn't, I want to know how we've never, like, mentioned it or joked about it.
How has this not been a conversation? Does this involve how we never had a conversation about it? And this isn't the rumor that Britney Spears was going to go to Marquette when we were
freshmen. No, but that's a good one. That was funny. But, what I learned was, I'm going to hit you with this. Do you know a famous actress whose father played basketball at Marquette?
Oh, I do know this. Yes, that it's the ex Mrs. Tom Cruise.
Yes,
Katie Holmes.
I did not know this. Am I the only one?
I don't know how I knew this, but I knew it.
Katie Holmes. You know, the actress, she was in Dawson's Creek. She was in Batman Begins. She's been a bunch of other stuff, but former Mrs. Cruise. It was fun. I didn't know this. I saw it on Twitter. Melissa Luck retweeted it, and she didn't know it either. She's like, how has this, like, never been mentioned? Some of you older alums, maybe this is not news to you, but Katie Holmes' father, Marty Holmes, played, and actually first two seasons under Al McGuire's first two seasons, Marty was on the roster. He didn't play a whole lot, averaged 2 points a game. And somebody retweeted it and said, like, I guess Katie Holmes was, like, at the game on Friday against Louisville. And somebody, like, tweeted a picture and said, why is Katie Holmes here? And somebody replied, oh, her father went to Marquette, played for Marquette. I'm like, what? I've never heard this. And so I did some Google searching, just making sure, like, try to verify it. And fair warning, if you're Googling this yourself to try to verify it, if you Google Katie Holmes, Marty Holmes, or Katie Holmes' dad, you will get a ton of articles about her divorce from Tom Cruise. Because I guess he was very much against the marriage and wanted it to end. But I finally came across an Instagram post from Katie Holmes herself, said, happy birthday, dad, hashtag Marquette. And it was like a team photo with him in it. So, like, I'm not expecting her to be like our own Ashley Judd or anything, but be at every game. But I guess Katie is a Marquette basketball fan. I just feel like it would have been mentioned more often, like maybe seeing her at games or making a reference. Hey, did you know Katie Holmes' father went to Marquette? I have not heard, like, anybody say that ever.
That it never came up in conversation. I knew her dad was a Marquette alum and a big fan, but I couldn't say whether or not she's a fan of the program or not.
Like I said, I don't think she's like, you know, our Ashley Judd, like going to every game, waving pom poms, and big fan like that. But she doesn't dislike Marquette,
right? She's not mad about it.
Yeah, like if Marquette won the title, she'd be like, "Hey, we go Marquette." Or, you know, Marquette makes a tournament or whatever. Yeah, good for Marquette. But like, and I also came across a post when they were doing the Marquette 100 thing last year. And like, you know, Marquette basketball tweeted, they didn't mention Katie Holmes in it, but they said, "This is Marty Holmes. He was one of 9 players to ever wear number 54, and he played for Almaguer in his first 2 seasons. But Katie Holmes was tagged in the picture." Like, you know how you can tag someone in the picture and not necessarily at them in the tweet? So right. I saw down, like, oh, Katie Holmes is tagged in the picture. So I guess, yeah, it is. So I learned that this week. Like, well, I'm curious how many people knew, like, if I'm in the minority and just I somehow missed this all this time, or if this is actually, like, I was tweeting back and forth with Melissa Luck about this. It's like, she said she had never heard this either. Like, no one mentioned it or, like saw her in the crowd or, like, made a joke about it. Like, she's been a fan as long as I have because I think she graduated around the same time we did. And she had never heard this. And yeah, I'm curious for how many people out there, like, especially those of you around my age, in your 30s, maybe early 40s, or those of you maybe in your late 20s. Did you know this? Did you know that Katie Holmes' father played at Marquette? I just learned it. I learn something new every day. Granted, I like when it comes to Marquette basketball, obviously I'm a big fan, but maybe I'm not the best like history buff when it comes to Marquette basketball.
Yeah, or especially pop culture, yeah.
Yeah, especially when it comes to like things pre-Al McGuire. Definitely like even pre-1990s, because I only really became a fan when I enrolled at the school. But, I've learned about, you know, Butch Lee and George Thompson and, you know, Al McGuire in 1977, 1974 and all that stuff. So, I mean, I know some things, but I wouldn't say, like, I would win a Marquette basketball trivia contest by any means. But, yeah, I learned that this week. So, even whether she truly is or not, I'm going to tell everybody that Katie Holmes is a big Marquette basketball fan.
Listen, there's nobody that's going to stop you. What I will do is I'll put when I send out the link for the podcast, I'll see if I can add a Twitter poll to it. To see how did you know Katie Holmes is Marquette royalty?
Yeah. Yeah, she's like right up there now. Like, yeah. Like, even though she didn't attend the school, we'll claim her as one of our own.
But like, I mean, pop culturally, who else, like in terms of famous attachments to Marquette, who else would be? I mean, obviously, Al's probably the most famous Marquette person.
Yeah,
right?
Like, especially if you're talking like non-athletes.
Right.
Like, if you were to, like, name the most famous Marquette alumni, you know, obviously you'd go through all the athletes first. I'm sure you know, rest in peace, Chris Farley. Danny Moody also would be up there. But, yeah, I would put Katie Holmes right up there next to Danny Moody, even though she didn't go to there. We'll claim her as one of our own. Why not?
Didn't Bob Odenkirk go to Marquette?
He did. Yeah, we'll put him up there. We'll claim him. Yeah, he went to Marquette for 2 years. He didn't graduate. I think he transferred somewhere else. But yeah, I'll put Better Call Saul. We'll claim him. So we'll put like those three near the top as far as famous Marquette alumni who are not athletes.
We could have had Britney Spears.
I want to say the actress. I forget her name, but she was in Field of Dreams. She played the wife in Field of Dreams.
Oh, the red hair. Red-headed actress, yeah.
Yes, I believe she is also a Marquette alum. Her name escapes me. But, yeah, so I think, yeah, we can go through. I feel like this is going to turn into a thread on Twitter of famous Marquette alumni that are not athletes.
Well, listen, we've got to do something for a Thursday. We don't have a game for another 72 hours. So.
Yeah, you know, I guess if not athlete. Well, I would say maybe not in sports because we have some famous, like, broadcasters. Like, Jen Ladd is at ESPN. Ben Tracy is at CBS Evening News. So there are some – Len Casper's doing play-by-play for the Cubs. So.
Russian, Steve Russian.
Oh, yeah. He's in Sports Illustrated. He was writing for Sports Illustrated. So, yeah, we can run it. So by marriage, we can claim Rebecca Lobo, too.
I guess.
Yeah. So we can do that. All right, so this is turning into a pointless podcast. But, hey, just let me know. Am I the only person who did not know this, or was this really, like, some hidden knowledge in Marquette basketball lore that, you know, Katie Holmes is the daughter of a former player? I just thought that was interesting.
Yeah.
Hit me on Twitter with that and other great thoughts, please. I'm Joe McCann 3 on Twitter. Phil is MOOOF 23. You can hit up Cracked Sidewalks as the team handle. Go to cracksidewalks.com, post the post the podcast there. Please rate us, review us, subscribe on Apple Podcasts. We also have a Scrambled Eggs Facebook page. Phil, any other final thoughts on Katie Holmes or other topics?
First of all, Dawson's Creek, always near and dear to my heart. No shame in that.
I want to say that was like really popular when we were in college.
Well, a former roommate of ours, Stan, and I used to race back from sophomore year physics so that we could watch Dawson's Creek.
Little did you know you were watching the daughter of a Marquette grad.
We know at the time, but it's good that that Joey and Pacey got together. We'll leave it at that.
That's just fantastic.
Let's
the great ending to this podcast.
Yeah. Well, let's hope that we get a great ending to the Kansas State game that results in a Marquette win. Let's
and maybe Katie Holmes will give us a shout out on Twitter and say go Marquette if we beat Kansas State.
Hey, that would be great.
Hopefully that happens. Thanks for listening, everybody. Until next time, seashells and balloons.